Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
If you're like me and refuse to let go of your skinny jeans, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good.
Awesome. I've had an interesting week. I was installing a light fixture and was trying to strip a wire, and I cut my finger pretty badly and bled all over the house. And the best to my effort, I tried to clean up all the blood because I know it bothers my wife to see. I scanned the house, I cleaned up everything, And the next morning, after I got my stitches and everything, my wife was still finding blood droplets in the bathroom and in other places that I didn't even think of. So let me just say that I think it's pretty hard to clean up a murder scene of all the blood, because I thought I did a pretty good job, and apparently I didn't. So we got interesting story tonight. crossing the pond.
Well, right. And we have quite a number of listeners from the UK, and many people have sent in requests. Please cover a British case over and over and over again. And so we've looked into it. We had many requests for very famous cases. And of course, we already covered Princess Di's death. Out of all the ones that I looked at, I would say in the top three for me was the case that we're going to cover tonight. When it comes down to it, we have, I would say the UK is right behind the United States in terms of listeners. Trust me, we're not going to just ignore you. And then on top of that, we also have a large number of Australian listeners. We'll definitely be adding more Australian cases as well, and even been in contact with people from Australia who want to guest on the show and discuss some of these cases. So yeah, if you can think of a case in Australia, it's on our list. Trust me. The case tonight, the one that caught my eye and I'm sure has caught Justin's now that he's looked into it, is Mary Bell.
This is nutty. I know that kids can do horrible things, but this is truly the nature versus nurture argument. Mary Bell is an 11-year-old girl who was accused and charged with the murder of two younger boys. Start with that, and we'll try to paint a picture of how a little girl like this gets to this point where she's accused and charged with murder.
Yeah, that's the mystery. So many people have looked into this and asked, how does a person become a murderer? And since Mary Bell killed more than one person in different time periods, she's a serial killer. So, and given her age, it really stands out. Now, I know we're going to get into where she came from, her home life when she was very young. I don't know. You know, so many people grow up in conditions like she did. And we're not overrun with killers like this. Not like her.
Yeah.
So, again, this is something people are going to keep investigating over time. Perhaps one day we'll have an answer. But right now, I think it's just too complex because we're born with certain attributes, with certain types of brains. So there's no telling what kind of monster Betty Bell gave birth to. But let's talk about her mother, Betty Bell. She's not a very good person.
I guess one of her parents died and she kind of had a mental breakdown from that.
Her father
passed away, and she started going off the deep end. We don't know who her father was, but she married a man who was an alcoholic and a drunk. Her mother, it said that she was a prostitute, and she brought Johns into the home. Her mother was an alcoholic also and fought with the stepfather. Very hostile environment for a child. What was the town they lived in?
It's Scotswood.
Scotswood. And Scotswood was pretty much a ghetto. It was very poor. They were in the process of bulldozing and tearing down a lot of the projects and a lot of the homes, but they weren't real quick about it. So essentially they left these abandoned structures everywhere, and the children would play in these structures unsupervised. And her mother never asked where Mary was going. So her mom, not the best person.
Right. And from early on, there's obviously, I would almost characterize it as animosity. Betty just doesn't seem to like her own daughter very much. And it's evident in the way that she treats her. It's said when she gave birth to her, the first thing that Betty said about her daughter was, "Take that thing away from me." That she literally shouted that. So that, you know, that might be hearsay, but given the environment she's in and the number of times that she drops Mary off with relatives, it's just sort of evident that she doesn't really want the responsibility of her, but then she almost seems to exploit her. And I suppose we'll get into that later, but one of the first traumatic things I see here is that she tries to give Mary away to a stranger.
That's insanity to just want to give away your child. But was it a complete stranger? Was it a John? Did you find out?
It's a woman. And the only reason that Mary wasn't taken away is because Betty's sister followed her and she saw what was happening. She really was concerned about Mary. It doesn't sound like she trusted Betty very much with her own daughter.
I also read that she tried to adopt her daughter to other family members. So she was really trying to get rid of Mary. Just Mary did not seem to be a convenience to her. It was more of a...
Well, that's where the exploitation comes in, because no matter what Betty does, she always comes back for her daughter. And that's just sort of curious. Why does she act like she wants her daughter to be gone and yet goes and retrieves her time after time?
Yeah.
And from what I understand, the family even tries to say, look, we'll take her. Don't worry about it. But she always comes back for her, and Mary goes back with her mother.
It's a weird symptom, and I've seen it myself, where it's a pride thing, where it's on her terms. If she wants to give Mary away, then that's okay. But if somebody wants to take Mary or take her daughter because she's an unfit parent, that's not acceptable. So she has to prove them wrong because it's not on her terms.
Yeah, that makes sense. Another thing that happens early on is Mary has a friend who's 5, and this friend gets run over by a bus. So early on, Mary witnesses someone killed right in front of her.
And Mary, she has a friend, Norma, who's a couple years older than her.
Right, Norma Bell, although they say there's no relation here. They just happen to have the same last name. Mm-hmm. As we go on, you'll hear more about this, but they say that the nature of their relationship is that Mary's the leader. Despite being younger, she operates at a higher level than Norma does, and it's quite evident in not only the way she speaks, but in the way she deceives. And Norma's more of a follower.
So in this poverty-stricken area with children just pretty much running around doing whatever they want, unsupervised and abandoned buildings, her and Norma are a team. It's said that they pick on children on the playground. It's said that they... even go so far as to attack some of the children. I know that Norma and Mary were arrested for a theft from a gas meter. I guess back in the 60s, they had, I guess, honor system meters or some kind of meter where you would go and pay. You'd put money in it, and they broke into it and stole money out of it. And they were arrested. And when the police officers arrested Mary and asked her about the theft, she said no comment. She's not even 10 years old, and she's telling a police officer, no comment. This is not a good start. You know, the manipulation, the deception is already in full force, so.
Right, in a more mature manner than one would expect from a young child. I suppose you could call them bullies. It certainly seemed as though there were some anger issues there. This is why we say that there's a possibility of the environment she was in contributing to the person that she is and the person she becomes, because she starts out abusing people her age, people around her, and younger relatives, but it's sort of, you could say it escalates. Why it escalates is unknown. One could guess that, sure, her environment has something to do with this. Her mother bring strange men into the home for prostitution purposes. Mary was found to be possibly overdosing on some of these pills that she would get out of her mother's purse or that her mother may have given to her. And then you add in the fact that her mother doesn't seem to really love her, and you have sort of a really harsh, unforgiving environment in her own home.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if she's got a John in the home and she wants privacy, I mean, what better way to get the child out of the picture than to give her pills and dope her out, knock her out? Or maybe she gave her pills and knocked her out for other uses, for other motives.
Yeah, there's so many possibilities here on why she would have these pills. Ultimately, it may have also been that she wanted her daughter to just overdose, period. So it's hard to know on that. That would all be guesswork. And we really only have Mary herself who talks of this. There aren't relatives who come out and can verify some of the worst aspects of her story. But moving on, so she's had some incidents. She's injured some different children over time.
Let's describe a couple of these attacks. The first one was a three-year-old boy. Her and Norma talked into coming with them to go to the candy store or something. And he takes off and he disappears and they can't find him for a while. And when somebody finally comes across him, whether it be the shop owner or a parent, he's bloodied and dazed. And they talk about that they either beat him or tossed him off a roof. He doesn't really have much to say about the attack, but he knows who did it to him. And so they know that Mary and Norma were involved. But because of their age, the police dismissed it. The police didn't investigate too much because who knows? This could just be a school, you know, a playground, schoolyard fight. Could have been something very simple like that. Another attack was a little girl named Pauline, who was actually about Mary's age. And the children always said that Mary had a very vicious temper, very short temper. And when she would get angry, she would lock her eyes on you, and you knew that you were in trouble. And so one day, Pauline was her target, and she started strangling Pauline on the playground. Norma could tell that this wasn't going to be a good thing and intervened, got Mary off of Pauline. Again, the authorities were called, the school officials were notified, but again, it was dismissed as a schoolyard fight, children, you know, playing or children playing too rough. And at no point did they investigate this or the other child. They just dismissed it. You know, they just said Mary is as an aggressive girl. Her teachers had written down in their notes that she had attacked students and she was very aggressive and had a temper on her. At that, Pauline was at least her size and her age. So I can, you know, maybe she was able to defend herself a little bit better. But she's now known for strangling children on the schoolyard. That's kind of telling at her age. That's most of the time they punch you in the face, they pull your hair. But strangling, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, is this something that she found out about through her mother's activities? Her mother may have been involved in sadomasochism or something. We don't know.
Maybe she was strangling her stepfather, or she watched them fight, you know?
Yeah, this is just a guess. I get the feeling that Mary was a witness to what her mother was doing inside the home oftentimes. I don't know, perhaps resentful of the lifestyle that she had to live. So she was using things that she saw, but using them in a very violent manner.
Who's her first victim?
Well, there's a young boy. He's 4 years old. His name's Martin Brown.
And they find Martin in an abandoned building. Maybe it was a home. Some workers came in and found the boy's body. And obviously he was playing, you know, in this abandoned home, and they couldn't really distinguish how he died. They weren't sure, but they thought it was suspicious enough because he was found in a house that they called the authorities, and the authorities came and investigated it. But by the end of it, the authorities had pretty much said he had either died of fright or possibly OD'd on pills. Is that pretty much the case on that one?
Well, I'd heard about the pills because there was an empty pill bottle nearby. And so they suspected that possibly the boy had taken a bunch of pills.
They just assumed that it was no malicious, no malice intent there. They just assumed that he died a horrible accident. And being that this rundown area with broken down buildings was called Rat Alley, the newspaper said, you know, Rat Alley boy found dead, and thus, you know, contributing to the stereotype of that, you know, dilapidated area. They contributed the dilapidated area to the death of the boy, saying, well, if we didn't have these empty homes and buildings, maybe these accidents wouldn't happen. And so they had a protest and a march saying, you know, please work faster, get these buildings knocked down. Let's, you know, refurbish the area. Let's get this nicer. And Mary was at all the marches right out in front. She liked to be in the center with the spotlight.
Yeah, I got the sense that these people didn't really watch after their kids, that they were just left to raise themselves, essentially. There didn't seem to be any helicopter parents.
And also, when the police did public announcements or PR events, Mary was at every single one, listening intently in the front, sort of putting herself in the incident, trying to see the outcome. She also went and visited the little boy's mother after his death and asked if he could come out, if she could see him. And the mother said, my boy's dead. And she said, I know that. I still would like to see him. And at that point, Martin Brown's mother got Martin's father to get Mary to get off their porch, which that's kind of creepy too.
Didn't she say, I want to see him in his coffin?
Yeah. She thought that he would be at the house. Like, she's not old enough to understand that he no longer lives there. She understands that he's dead, but she doesn't understand that he's no longer there. It's like sort of a disconnect from it all.
Well, but there's also a possibility, I don't know what it was like there at the time, but it's possible that families may have had a loved one in their coffin in their home for visitation at times.
Yes, but I think at that point it'd been a week or two from the time of the incident, so I don't think the visitation would have lasted that long. I think it was just her naive understanding of life and death at that point.
Or messing with the mother.
Yeah, just being cruel.
But at this point, they don't haul Mary in. They're not looking at this as there's a murderer out there.
No. They misdiagnosed the death. They did not investigate it. Who would have guessed to go look for a child?
Let's talk about the day nursery. Because the day nursery in May of that year is broken into and vandalized.
Oh, yeah.
And there are notes left.
Yes, there are notes talking about how I murder so I can come back. There are notes that talk about I killed Martin and weird, crude drawings.
Yeah, the notes are very disturbing. I have them right here. I murder so that I may come back. I don't know the meaning of that one, but to me, at first, it sounds like it could be that she's somehow going to come back from like the dead at some point. But when I read it over and over again, it started to say to me that you better watch out because I could come back.
I just look at it as kids write dumb stuff. Teenagers write dumb stuff. They think they're being, you know, deep and poetic and dark, but I just look at it as kind of ramblings.
Another note said, fuck off, we murder. Watch out, Fanny and faggot.
Wow.
The F word is F-U-C-H, and off is O-F. We did murder Martin Brown. Fuck off, you bastard. They're violent notes. One last one. You are micey because we murdered Martin. Go, Brown. Look out, there are murders about by Fanny and all faggot, you screws. And these, of course, are misspelled. It was obvious to the authorities that these notes were written by children.
Now, whether or not they were written by the actual murderer or just people, you know, kids trying to be taunting and cruel. Well, they didn't think about it because they didn't think Martin had been killed.
Yeah, interesting is, so that day, the police bring the notes back to their station. Mary draws an image of a boy in the exact same position that Martin Brown was found in, and she wrote the word tablet.
Yeah, meaning the pill bottle or pills that were by his body.
Well, anyway, so the nursery actually installs some sort of an alarm because they suspect that this isn't the last time they'll get those visitors.
Yeah.
And it pays off because Friday the same week, the alarm sounds off at the nursery and they catch Mary and Norma there.
So it's pretty obvious that they were the same people that broke in and probably the people that wrote the cruel notes.
Well, Mary denies it at first. Yeah. She said that they'd never broken in there before. But yeah, and then not too long after, within a week, Mary ends up attacking Norma.
Great friend.
Mary ends up pointing at Martin's house at this time and saying, that house over there, that's where I killed.
Pointing at where the body was found.
Right. Because Mary's got a mouth on her, again, people aren't taking her seriously. They figure she's aggressive, she talks a lot, and they're not putting it together. They're not seeing her as the threat she really is.
No, and why would they? Who would ever guess?
Right. The number of children who are capable of murder, it's a very small number. But I have heard there are people out there that do not believe young children are capable of murder. And I've been in conversations with people like this, and that's actually one of the reasons why this case attracted me, that I wanted to talk about it, is because this is a young girl who's ramping up. We already discussed the death of Martin Brown and how the authorities at this point aren't taking this seriously enough. They just can't imagine that he was murdered. Well, as we'll see, Mary's not done yet. She's getting started here, and it's going to get worse.
The 31st of July, which is about 2 months after the death of Martin Brown, there's another child who is 3 years old, younger than Martin, smaller, and his name is Brian Howell, and they find his body in the Tin Lizzie, the grassy area behind the projects, essentially.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
It's obvious he's been murdered. There's no question. He's stripped half naked. He's laid out on the ground. He's got puncture wounds on his legs. There's blood in his eyes, or his eyes are bloodshot from pretty much strangulation. So they know that somebody attacked him. At this point, they start investigating it as a murder. And with Martin Brown being so close by, they actually reopen the Martin Brown case also and investigate both of them simultaneously.
Well, the injuries to Brian are very strange. Some of his hair was actually cut away, and his genitals were partially skinned. It doesn't look as though he was killed by an adult. They described it as there was something playful about it. It's still horrific. It's shocking. And they found a pair of scissors nearby, which were partially broken. Like one of the ends of the scissors was bent.
Yeah, bent or broken off. Yeah.
His belly was cut into as though someone was cutting letters into it. From what I understand, it was described as it looked like someone had cut an N into it and a B, but then someone came back and made the N look like an M.
Possibly a Norma Bell changed to a Mary Bell.
Yeah, that's just it, because there's Norma Bell and Mary Bell. You kind of have to wonder if Norma cut the N in there and then Mary corrected it.
Again, the police announcements about this case and investigation, Mary is at the front of all the PR engagements. She's asking the police questions. She's engaged in this horrific crime, putting herself kind of front and center over this boy, this 3-year-old boy that was recently murdered.
Well, when they were looking for this boy, that's the interesting thing, is Mary seemed to know all along where he was. She says, "Are you looking for your Brian?" So she and Norma head off as if they're looking for him, and they go right over this industrial area. Mary points over towards these concrete blocks and says that he might be playing behind there, or he might be between them. And Norma attempts to distract everyone from that and say, "Oh no, he never goes over there." That's where they end up finding Brian. Yes. Is behind that area. I mean, I would say that's probably what does her in right there.
There's actually a 9-year-old boy who is a witness, places all three of them, Norma, Mary, and Brian, over there.
Right. That's true. Her statement plus his eyewitness testimony connects it together, because as far as I remember, that boy may have had some issues.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you add those two things together, it just seems to be too clear that she was involved.
And Mary admits that she was with him that day. Mary admits that they went to go play. So essentially, she places herself there with the boy also. But she completely denies any involvement with the murder.
Yeah, she tries to say that there was some other boy that was with Brian that day, an 8-year-old boy. There was a confrontation of some sort. But of course, the police don't buy this.
When the police start to hone in on Mary, they go to Mary's house to question her. And her stepfather answers the door and yells at the police, tells them to get off his property, and tries to sic his dog on them. So I guess I only bring that up because it just kind of, again, shows what the home life is like. If her stepfather is willing to threaten police officers and investigators, you know, with bodily harm and sicking the dog on them, he just doesn't sound like a great guy.
Well, Norma, this is where things start to get weird because Norma and Mary don't want to take credit for this crime, and they start to point fingers. Mary, who claimed that there was a boy with Brian that day, she describes that boy playing with broken scissors. Now, this is a really big giveaway because the police hadn't told anyone about the scissors. And Mary suddenly knows about these scissors and exactly what they look like and how they're damaged.
Another thing the police never released was the first boy, Martin Brown, being found with the pill bottle. And she drew a picture of him with, you know, tablet with an arrow. And they said that that was not public either.
Yeah, there's no getting away at this point. After they're done listening to Mary tell her stories, they end up charging her. They end up arresting her. I think she says something like, "I'm all right with that."
Yeah. And they're impressed yet kind of shocked by the way she interviews when she's interrogated. They'll ask her a question and she'll answer that question, denying all, you know, culpability with the crime, but jump ahead and start, you know, asking and answering more questions that she perceives them or anticipates them to be doing, pretty much saying, "Yep, I didn't do this. I wasn't there, and you can let me go now." You know, you can say she's mature for her age. You can say she's smart for her age, but really it's she's very manipulative for her age, more so than most children.
Yeah, she even, when she's being questioned by the police, she even at one point asks if the place is bugged, which is, where does she get this information from? It's nothing that would just be pulled from thin air. So obviously she's been given this information by somebody. Someone's educated her on the investigative process and the lines of questioning that she would face, I would imagine.
And during the trial, it was publicized, it was in the media and the news, but for once, they didn't really glamorize it. They didn't over-exaggerate things. They were very nice about it or sympathetic about it because here's a terrible tragedy. Here's a child that's killed another child, and they weren't out for blood. They were like, "We need to, you know, treat these children with sympathy and treat them and not punish them. We need to make things right." So that was kind of the angle that I got from the trial.
She actually describes the method, and this is something that another witness had described, described it of Mary, even though Mary's trying to attribute this to Norma. She would rub the little boy's neck and say, "Oh, you have a sore throat. I'll help to make it better." And as she would rub, she would start squeezing harder and harder. Norma even says that Mary's fingertips would go white when she was really applying the pressure. It's a scary thought. I mean, it's disturbing just thinking about this young girl who, by the time she's committing the second murder, she's 11 years old. When I was looking into this story, I just assumed the "I murder so that I may come back" was written by Mary. It's really interesting, but they had someone look at the notes, compare handwriting, Mary's and Norma's, to the notes, and they discovered, in their opinion, that Norma had written that one. When you ask the question of how much is Norma involved in these murders, that's one part. Why would she write that? Is she just cool because she's hanging out with the killer? Or is she writing it because she's definitely involved? Again, we talked earlier about how Brian had an N carved into him. And this wasn't known right off the bat. They discovered after cleaning him up and some time had passed, but and then that N had been turned into an M, apparently. They could tell by the way it was cut. Beyond that, they found fibers from Mary on both of the bodies when they checked them out. And then they found fibers from Norma on Brian.
Yeah, so it seems that Norma might have intervened in the past, but not in these two situations, she might have had more of a hand in the two murders.
Right. It's almost as though people have sympathy for Mary Bell, but they really have sympathy for Norma because they don't go after her the way they do Mary. Mm-mm. Just to clarify, Mary had a gray wool dress, and that's where the fibers came from that they found. And Norma had a maroon skirt.
So pretty obvious. It's not like they had to even look at these things under a microscope to kind of match them back to.
Right. They were different colors, the red and the gray. But that even comes up at during the trial is Mary just, was she born bad or was she turned bad by her mother? The lack of love, the animosity, the exposure to her mother's seedy lifestyle and her abusive father.
Now, Norma is dismissed, let go during the trial. She's not charged. They say that Norma is slow or was influenced by Mary. Norma is a follower.
Diminished capacity,
that's a good word. Can only compare and contrast on how American courts, they typically go after them to confess first. So I was surprised and thankful that they were less heavy-handed with Norma because of her diminished capacity. Because that doesn't seem to be the case all the time. They sometimes go after the low-hanging fruit, and you're the one that, you know, we'll get you to confess to this because you're not all there. But they do go after Mary, and they go after her to the fullest extent of the law as far as an 11-year-old will go. You know, they can't charge her with murder and stick her in an adult penitentiary. They have to treat her as a child because she is one. So they sentence her to 12 years, essentially, for manslaughter. She goes to Redwood, which is, I guess, a juvenile detention center, where she is the only girl. She is the only female.
Well, yeah, the trial only lasted 9 days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by today's standards, that seems kind of short. But I would say it's the overwhelming evidence. Her knowledge of aspects of the crime scene, it's too much. And even though you have this, she said, it's really Mary that is putting it out there that she's a killer. She's the one that's taking credit for it when she's not speaking to the police. So Norma doesn't really seem to do that so much. So I think there probably is some truth to the fact that Norma was more of a follower and that Mary was the one who had, she just had way more issues. But Mary would say that her home life had a lot to do with this and that both she and Norma were not happy and that they were hoping to either escape to Scotland or to just be taken away by the authorities. Either way, they just wanted an escape. It's just interesting that in order to escape, she feels as though she needs to commit murder and then lie about it. So I don't know how much truth there is in that, because if she really wanted to be taken away, she could have committed murder and then just said, look what I did.
She had enough sense to know that what she did is wrong and she's going to face a strict penalty for it. So she's not going to own up to it.
But it's interesting how her story changes whenever she's not speaking to the authorities. Away from the authorities, she wants to talk big and say, look what I did. Mm-hmm. And, oh yeah, we want to run away or we don't care if we get taken away by the authorities. But when faced with law enforcement, she puts on an act and just says, I'm not going to answer your questions. You're always coming after me. And it was Norma that did this. So she doesn't want to take any credit. So again, I think it's manipulation. I think, you know, we're going to get into it, but one of the big aspects of this case is that when, as time goes on, she's going to serve 12 years, But it's almost as though the vast majority of the people who look at this case feel sympathy for her, feel like she's a product of the environment her mother put her in, and that she can't really be held responsible. Measuring that up against what she says and what she does, how much sympathy should we have for this person?
I think people see a sharp young girl, so they have sympathy for her because she's smart, she's witty, she's a young girl who's put in a bad situation. I know when she was in a detention center, she wrote a letter to her mother telling her mother to confess because her mother is the actual guilty party in all this. She probably didn't realize that by writing her mother this letter, she really is admitting guilt that she'd done these horrible things, because she's saying, I did these things because of you, Mom. It's kind of heart-wrenching to see that, because it's this epiphany, this reality that she's in when she finally starts to sort of understand the magnitude of the situation she's in.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
Do you think some kids are just born bad?
I don't know. You look at some people, Jeffrey Dahmer, for instance, from what I understand, he had a very good upbringing, and there was nothing there to indicate that he would become such a monster. But as we all know, he was downright despicable, and there was nothing to show why he would become what he was, what he became. Yeah, in a case like this where we weren't able to see her in person or even on the news, you know, this is years later that we're approaching this, it would all just be, it'd be guesswork. You know, we have no way of knowing. Just going off of her statements and what she did, I personally think that it's a combination of things, that she was born bad, but I think her her lifestyle, the way she was brought up, escalated it.
Anyone can be born bad, but some of us aren't as susceptible to the realities of life or abuse, whatever. So somebody can be born bad, but have a good life and never do bad things, whereas other people might be born neutral and some bad things turn them bad. I know there was a guy that was trying to study serial killers and psychopaths, and he scanned their brains, and he found a particular brain pattern that all psychopaths had. Then for giggles, he's like, well, I'm going to scan my own brain. This guy's a scientist. He's a normal guy. And he had the same brain pattern as a psychopath. Yet he wasn't, you know, a terrible person. He wasn't a liar. He wasn't murdering people. Maybe he just wasn't susceptible to the same environmental aspects that these other people were. And I think with Mary, I couldn't tell you if she was born bad, but in that environment, she was very susceptible to what happened to her. And I definitely say that her mother or her upbringing is a lot to blame. Not that she's totally innocent of her own actions, but she's a child. So how accountable can we hold her? You know, I think about The Walking Dead in that one season where the two little girls are on there, and the one just has no clue that the dead people are zombies trying to eat her, and she thinks it's pretty cool that when you die, you get to come back. And she ends up killing her sister because she's like, no, it's cool. She's going to come back. And in the environment of The Walking Dead, a post-apocalyptic zombie world, there's no therapy for a child like this. There's no rehabilitation. So they have to deal with her the way they deal with her. And I guess with Mary Bell, it's good that she got the help she needed. We had the therapy. We have the society with the structure to pretty much deal with a child that is so gone the wrong direction, such as Mary. Because when she gets out when she's 23 years old, she gets a name change. She gets to live, you know, a new life where she does struggle right when she gets out. And she actually, I guess, commits some crimes because she's trying to, you know, like shoplifting or something, where she's trying to get put back in jail because she's so freaked out of freedom, which I don't think it's, I'm a criminal and I want to go back to jail. I think it's when you've been institutionalized for 12 years, that's all you know. We see it with other cases where people are released or exonerated. But she finally moves on and lives a fairly reasonable life where she marries and has a child. I guess the rehabilitation was a success and she was able to get the help that she needed. It was just too bad that it was too late.
Well, her getting help, that may be a question, because I don't know that everyone would agree that she's been brought around.
She hasn't killed anyone.
Well, you say that, but, you know, her life changes. She ends up having a daughter in 1984, and then, of course, she becomes a grandmother later on, the 2000s. You know, let's start with the victim's relatives. They don't feel as though justice has been done, as far as I can tell.
No, of course not. If you've lost your child, it doesn't matter what the system has done. There's no rehabilitation. They want to see punishment.
Yeah, so even though she has anonymity, the press actually tracks her down at some point and discovers where she is and things. Well, so they report on, they're forced to move Mary again. Her daughter is given the same anonymity and protection, and that same anonymity and protection is passed down to Mary's granddaughter, who's known as Z in the press. I suppose previous to that time, this just wasn't done, to have this lifetime anonymity. Before you were granted anonymity for a certain number of years, it was asked that she receive lifetime protection for herself, for her daughter, and her granddaughter, and they granted it. It seems as though the government believes that it did the right thing and that she served her time, that she's been somewhat rehabilitated.
No longer a threat to society.
Right. Well, is that's the question. Is she really in the end? Is this what we're trying to say? In the end, she's not really responsible for her actions, that she was put in an unreasonable situation, an unreasonable environment where the only outcome was horror.
Yeah.
And death. So now that they've gotten her away from that and away from her crazy mother, that she's going to be okay. What we do know is, despite her anonymity, she was involved in a couple of books about her life and about these murders. The author doesn't seem to have a problem pointing out that she thinks Mary may still be psychopathic because of the way her emotions run. And when she is talking about a murder, she seems to act sad about it. But that sadness turns into happiness or some other emotion, you know, at the drop of a hat.
It's almost like she's, you expect me to be sad, so therefore I'm going to act or behave sad. It's like all an act, essentially.
Yeah, she didn't seem genuine. So it's and going beyond that, she was able to make quite a large sum of money from the books. The author tries to say, well, it's really for her daughter. There is some outrage to this. I know when I was first reading about it, the source was saying that no one was upset with this, but it does seem as though people were upset about it.
Definitely.
In America, you're not allowed to profit.
No.
If you committed a crime, you're not allowed to profit from that crime. So you know, write a book, you're not making any money.
And I would say that the culture in America is that child is a lost cause, put him in jail for the rest of his life or her life. There would be no rehabilitation there. It would be put him away.
That's really the question here. So she's in there for 12 years, then she gets out. The alternative is to keep her in there, yes, lifetime, because of the horrific nature of the crimes. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think, well, yeah, lifetime, or do you think 12 years was fair? I mean, if you have the say-so, what do you do with her?
So when I first heard about this case and that she murdered two boys, I thought she did it all in one incident, and I was giving her a lot more of a pass, like, okay, maybe she snapped, or maybe she killed these two boys and then she went to jail. But there was 2 months between the two murders, so she planned them. But at the same time, she's 11. What do you do with an 11-year-old? And that's why I bring up The Walking Dead. It's like, well, it depends on the society that you live in. It depends on the environment that you have and the resources that you have. And with what they had, that's the best they could do. And they didn't. They sentenced her to 12 years. I mean, typically, a lot of juvenile crimes, they get out when they're 18 because now they're an adult and boom, they can get out. So for them to hold her until she was 23, at least there's that. At least she went from a juvenile detention center to a real prison, served some time. I don't think an 11-year-old is capable of understanding the consequences of their actions. Now, if you would keep her in a institution or, you know, like a mental ward, I probably wouldn't have been too against that. But keeping her in prison for the rest of her life, I don't agree with that. I don't think an 11-year-old understands the ramifications of their actions at that point.
I have a hard time trying to figure out what I would have done with her, because it's difficult to know whether her statements are true or not, because she never really seemed to tell the truth in the past. So when she comes out and says that her mother used her as essentially a sex toy for some of these Johns, you wonder if she was trying to release pent-up anger and frustration with the shortcomings of her life, and that's putting it mildly. So if her mother really put her through the ringer, it's difficult to say what her motivations were. They could be for escape, or she could be just a bad person. Or it could be, you know, when we talk about her apparent deception years later or psychopathy, that perhaps she just spent too much time doing that stuff. So it's sort of just, it's ingrained in her to act that way. It's almost like she may have stopped killing, but she still is who she is.
Yeah, I believe that. I don't think she has changed much. She just understands that her actions will have ramifications. Regardless of remorse, regardless of repentance, she just now knows this is how you have to behave in society and you can't go around killing people.
Well, the way I looked at it was when she committed these crimes, she was a child under her mother's roof, mm-hmm. who she obviously despised. Now that she's an adult and she runs her own house, she no longer has that pressure on her. And so I feel like perhaps that's why she's not killing anymore, if she isn't, because she's not in that same situation. She's not having to exercise violence to feel like she has any power. She's already the head of her own household.
She has the power now.
Right. So she doesn't have to kill it now because she's moved on. But yeah, I don't really get the sense that she was sorry for what she did. Again, you know, you can kind of see the other side where you say, well, if it wasn't really her fault to begin with, that she was put in this situation, then it's hard for her to apologize for something that was beyond her control.
Do you think it should be a requirement that people show remorse or say they're sorry for their crimes before they're released or paroled?
I don't know, because anyone can lie about that. It's just, it's one of those things I think we as a society would like to see. It's nice. It gives us a better feeling about somebody. They're already going to be released. It'd be nice to see them express some remorse. I suppose I'd put it like this. There's just no good here.
No.
So you, for me at the end of this, I don't feel like, well, she's rehabilitated, everything's better. No, I feel like she's changed environments, she's changed lives, and she's, yeah, I think it would have meant something more if she had expressed some real remorse, which I just never found that.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.